He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good morning to our listeners on this week's version of Car Keys with Jay DeMarkin and Robin Leach. Let's go into the automotive industry in the world. You've been recently in Europe. You might want to give us a report on what you're seeing happening. Are the buzzes around Europe, and what do you think of them? That's the VW van.
I saw my first VW Buzz over a year ago in Europe, and I did see a couple on the streets, not up close. And I'm waiting to see it here. I'm also waiting to see what the price point of the Volkswagen Buzz is going to be.
Too high. But
do you know what the figure is here? Because when I saw them in Europe last year, the price was crazy in the high 60,000 euros.
Euros, right.
Granted, that includes their sales tax, which is pretty high, but it was still pretty... The price point is still pretty high for something that really is based on the Volkswagen ID.4, which is a pretty darn good electric vehicle. But the Buzz is cool. We'll see how it does as far as sales here in this country.
I believe it's going to be the long wheelbase version only in
Correct.
The U.S., which is what it should be. For listeners who have heard me for years, they may or may not remember, I still have a 2000 Eurovan, which I love. They still make a version of the Eurovan that looks somewhat like mine for European cities. I saw them in Amsterdam. I did see a Buzz in Amsterdam this year. I did not. It was had blacked out windows, which was annoying because I couldn't see inside. These darkened windows is another topic. I'll leave it alone at the moment. But I like the looks of it. For some reason, it didn't look as interesting as the pictures have been looking when we've seen them in the U.S. press. But I think it's going to be an interesting van. The range is going to be important for those who use vans for longer distance travel. And I think it will sell. What I'm disappointed in, of course, because my Eurovan has the very interesting interior with back-facing second-row seats, buckets, a bench third seat facing forward that will slide out into a bed, and a table which folds out from the side wall, those kind of interior appointments that came on Eurovans back in the early
other
part
century,
of this century.
Because I can tell you, I've ridden in a taxi Eurovan recently, Volkswagen Eurovan, and the seats are now all facing forward.
Well, they may all be in the new ones.
Anyway,
it was a comment.
I also, just thinking about the industry, it's interesting to note that Ford and VW have much stronger ties in Europe than they do here. They actually manufacture vehicles in common and sell them,
right.
You know, different variants under both brands.
Right.
For instance, Ford has a smaller version of the Explorer, which they call, I don't even know what they call it. I saw it at a Ford dealership. It is an electric vehicle, and basically it's a copy of the Volkswagen ID.4 that we have here.
With a Ford body, right?
What's that?
With a Ford body style.
Well, it's just made to look like a Ford, you know, and just like this practice has been obviously going on for decades.
They've been together
industry.
For decades. That's true.
You know, here we have the Honda Prologue, which is Honda's first electric vehicle, which is nothing else but a rebadged or, you know, slightly worked on rebadged Chevy, I think it's Equinox or whatever their small electric SUV is. But Volkswagen and Ford in Europe do manufacture vehicles that they sell under both brand names, and each of the manufacturers, you know, sells the vehicle in their own obviously network. Interesting to note too that Volkswagen has an ID.3, which is more the size of a Golf, which I can't recall if we're going to get in this market or not. I can't imagine that we won't get an ID.3. And by the same token, the ID.4 Volkswagen is only just getting on the market in Europe now. But anyway, different vehicles, different markets, as we
there
know.
Are, am I correct in saying that there are a lot more lower-level electric vehicles running around Europe than are even ever going to show up on our streets in the U.S.?
It's interesting because, and I don't know the name of the model exactly, but Peugeot has a small electric vehicle that's pretty narrow. It's compact.
Looks like a Smart 4.2, I think.
Something like that, but it's like the size of a Kia Soul, I would say, and it's a four-door, straight back, like a wagon, like a little box type, like the old Scions were. I saw it on a very small, steep street, and the car was just zipping up the road. It was pretty impressive, actually, and it's back to the point that, you know, electric vehicles actually have a lot of a lot of power relative to their size and what you would expect them to be able to do. So, you know, I don't know what the range is on that vehicle. Obviously, you know, we know Peugeot is part of the Stellantis group. And will we ever see a variant of that car in our market?
We'll wait and see.
Wait and see. It's a bit small, okay. But was interesting, I thought.
Okay. Over here in the U.S., I want to just comment a little bit on a headline I'm reading here. Dealers eye what's in works for the Mustang. Ford offers peek at a four-door coupe and an off-road variant. I do not know why the Bronco is not enough. Is not enough for Ford to have as their off-road vehicle counterpart to the Jeep Wrangler type. I don't know what you thought when the Mach-E came out in the electric form that it did, and of course Ford is still producing gasoline Mustangs of the old style, and is probably going to do so for some time to come. But the whole concept of enlarging the Mustang brand name to go out into different categories of vehicles confounds me, quite frankly, because of what the Mustang has meant to the U.S. consumer for decades.
Well, and I sense Mike is on the other side of the mic and ready to barge in.
Well, that's identity.
There he is.
Welcome, Mike.
That's just the destruction of the identity of the Mustang. It's abusive.
Well, that is what
should be a law
on
this one.
I think we all agree here.
Yeah, it's you do the brand name or you take a name like that in order to get people to purchase the vehicle.
Correct.
Because of that brand name. But then you have to have a limitation on where you essentially bastardize it by making it into something that it should never be.
Right. I agree, Mike.
And mentally, I can't see the Mustang any other way than a muscle car in general.
Yeah.
I think we all agree. But
I think we agree, too. The problem with the muscle car era is that it's probably waning in terms of numerical buyers.
But find a new name, create a new brand for it.
And
then,
they're trying to create a new market to keep the Mustang label meaningful.
Time to retire the Mustang name if they're
the
going to do that.
The other thing that's interesting in this week's version of my automotive periodicals is the Dodge Charger situation with the EV with a very apparent muscular engine sounding background, so that you won't really know that you're driving an EV if you get to drive one of these cars. And apparently I haven't seen one on the road. I haven't heard one anywhere. Maybe one will show up at Lime Rock, Jay. But Stellantis is trying to make this Dodge Charger, and it's going to be less expensive, the electric one, than the continuing production of apparently some gasoline versions of the Charger to try to ward off people going away from the Charger entirely just because it went electric on them.
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I associate, and this is just me, muscle cars, current muscle cars, like Dodge Chargers, with hot rod pickup trucks, whether it's a Ford F-150 Raptor or other variants of other brands of pickup trucks that become more of a show-off vehicle.
Right.
Than really a utility vehicle. So I'm curious to see how the how electric pickup trucks are going to do, because that's a much bigger market than you know, the three or four muscle cars of you know, yesteryear and limited productions nowadays.
I've only had limited communication with electric pickup owners, mainly the Ford 150 Lightning. And we've talked about this often on this show when we've gotten into this situation. The whole problem with the pickup electric situation is once you load them up, the range goes down remarkably
okay,
steeply.
You've said that before, but actually, I don't think anybody really cares. Not really cares, but that
if
is
the land
no
is going to solve it,
it's
with
no
their
different.
Generator.
It's no different than a diesel-powered truck or a gas-powered truck.
Actually, it is different. I'm sorry, Jay. It's different.
It's the same idea. You don't get this. When I tow my 6,000-pound trailer in back of my diesel-powered vehicle, I get half the range because I'm getting half the gas. Half
correct,
the fuel
but you've got a 30-gallon tank or whatever you have in there.
Okay, but the range is still the half. It's still half of what it is when I'm not towing the vehicle. So the idea is very much the same. You may have more limited range because you have less range to begin with. But again, I wouldn't obsess about that.
Well, I'm going to obsess because you're not obsessing enough about it, because you're forgetting the fact of atmospheric conditions which adversely affect the electric situation more so than they do the fossil fuel diesel-powered trucks. They don't lose an additional 30% of range because it's 0 degrees outside or 120 degrees outside, depending on what you want to look at. And
I can
that is something that is being discovered as people work with these trucks in different environmental situations. That's the electric trucks, besides just loading them up to have their electric range or 70% below. Then you add the atmospheric situation, and it's still a problem.
I think it's a problem that's going to be going away just because of the evolution of the electric vehicles. But having said that, there's no point in my arguing because I'm going to keep my diesel-powered tow vehicle for a long,
okay,
long time.
Okay, perfect.
So, you know, who am I to...
What about the new Lincoln Navigator that's so good? I've been reading a little bit about it, too.
It looks big. I don't know how Lincoln is doing as a brand.
They're not doing as well as they'd like to be doing against the Chevrolet and the GMC versions of the Yukons and Suburbans, I don't think. I bet they're being outsold 3-to-1 or 4-to-1 by the GMC products. I think the Lincolns look very nice. I've driven a few of them, not recently, but I've driven a 2023 and a 22, and they were more floaty than I remember the Suburbans being when I drove Suburbans. I haven't driven many of those lately either, but they certainly are their interiors. Lincoln's going a different route with their interiors, if you've read a little bit about it, and they want to make it comfortable and almost, I don't know, living room comfort-like inside. I think they're a good-looking vehicle. They have a long wheelbase version as well as a regular wheelbase version, so they are right up there with the spec sheets to counter the GM versions of their vehicles like
so,
that.
And I'm willing to bet that a big size of that market is actually livery vehicles, and those Navigators are replacing the Lincoln Town Cars of yesteryear in the livery world. That's
right.
My hunch, and I could be wrong. And to some extent, same thing with the Cadillac Escalade. But that's I have nothing to back that up at this point. But
okay, Nissan's struggling in our U.S. market as a dealership and a maker of cars, and the apparent one of the reasons is that they don't have any electric or hybrid versions of vehicles out there to compete with the Kias and the Hyundais and the Toyotas and everybody else that's got either hybrids or electric vehicles out there. They've redesigned the Rogue. It looks nice. I have not seen one live. I happened to drive an Armada recently. I was out west helping my wife deliver her last daughter to college, and we had booked a Rogue And thank God they didn't have any at the check-in, and we were offered an Armada. And let me tell you, the Armada's interesting. We had it for 3 days. It certainly did its job carrying the stuff we had to carry to make the daughter's room at college into a place so she could habitate. And we had it filled to the gills. It rode quite nicely. I found several things, interestingly, sort of cheap about it, including the lightweightness of the doors. An Armada is a big Nissan vehicle. Has a V8 engine. We were at Mile High City, Denver, and Boulder. It was nice to have that engine. I think the mileage was somewhere sub at 20 miles per gallon by the time we got through hauling stuff around. The seats were very comfortable. Overall, a good vehicle, but I think slightly below what I would have called their competition, which would be maybe the Ford Explorer, maybe something a little bigger in the GM line, like the Tahoe version. Overall, a nice vehicle for the purpose we needed it for.
So, Robin, let me just say one thing about Nissan, and let me be blunt. Nissan is a has-been. And you just mentioned that you found one in a rental car agency, and that's where you will find Nissans from now on.
I think you're right, Jay. I do not disagree with that statement.
Okay. This is a hunch, but when you look at the market share of Nissan relative to Toyota or Honda over the last few decades,
it's been declining.
Nissan has always been behind Toyota in sales. But pretty darn sure that there was a time where Nissan outsold Honda, and that hasn't been true for decades. And
right.
And they're not coming back. They used to have the Altima sedan, gone. Maxima sedan. When I say gone, they may exist, but I promise you, go through town, drive all week, and count the number of Nissans you will see, other than the Rogue. Not very many, if any at all.
Right.
Like you said, no electric vehicles besides the Leaf, which we have to, credit Nissan for coming out with
the Leaf was
one of the pioneering vehicles in the electric world, and it just suffered a.
And then they fell flat on their face by not continuing in the other areas, vehicle wise.
Yep. So, I think they're gone. That's just my take on this.
Okay. Meanwhile. It seems like the Korean versions of vehicles, mainly Hyundai and Kia.
Oh, they're here to stay. They're here to
stay. They're here to stay, and they're going up style, and they're putting a lot of style and features into their vehicles without increasing the prices markedly, which just puts the Americans and other European versions at a price disadvantage. But they are certainly here to stay, and people like them.
I think the Kia EV9 electric vehicle is going to be a killer. It's the right size for our market. It looks great. It's got a very modern design, and it accomplishes everything it needs to do at a price that's a little higher than I thought it would be. Although it's competitive, it's priced. It takes more money to get into the Kia EV9 than it does to get in a Telluride, which you could say is the gasoline-powered version, although the two chassis have nothing in common. But they're the same size. They're basically the same target market, except the EV9 is an electric vehicle.
Right.
And the first reviews of the vehicle are very
excellent.
Positive.
Yeah.
And I've seen one or two around, and they look great. Speaking of which, I'm back on electric vehicles and traveling abroad. I saw a Lotus, and I don't even know what the name of the electric vehicle is. But Lotus, speaking of brands that are being diluted and not, going from being a little sports car to a big SUV electric vehicle manufacturer, I don't quite get it. But Lotus is coming out with an electric SUV that is huge, but also very modern looking. And the one I saw in Europe, which was black, had camera review mirrors, which we know are not legal here in the States. But it was pretty interesting looking.
What do you think about camera-based rearview mirrors in general going forward? Is it one of those things you have to get used to if it's going to become ubiquitous throughout the industry?
I think they're going to have to be, you know, they're going to have to do what mirrors do, which is give you a mirrored image, which actually is, do backup cameras give you the real image or the mirrored image?
I think backup cameras give you a real image because the cameras for backup cameras are on the back of the car from anywhere from the license plate height upwards, depending on the make it, you know, the type of vehicle. And they're sometimes underneath the roof ceiling. So I think you're getting a direct view from those cameras in the back of the car.
That's a good question. It's pretty pathetic that we've had them for, 10 years now, maybe
more? Well, you know, you can go to the back of a car with a rear-view camera, and you can find a little eye that's sitting there looking
out.
Yeah,
but does it give you, when you're looking at the screen, are you seeing the mirrored view, like, you know, reversed view?
I have to look the next time I look.
I'm not sure, because when I use the one in mine, I really don't have a reference point for that when I've been backing up. So I'm considering it's not a mirror view. Back to your Lotus real quick. I've got one up here on the computer starting at $107,000 for this.
Well, this is Lotus is
hyper SUV,
they're calling it. No matter what the car from back when they first came out in the 70s or whatever, they always were way higher, probably because they're low volume and expensive to build. But doesn't surprise me.
Hold on. Mike, tell us more about the vehicle, because I really don't know much about it.
Well, I'm just, you know, on their website, they've got all these. It looks pretty much like a lot of the SUVs. Now, they all kind of model after each other, it seems, year after year.
Boring.
Yeah, if you will. They describe it as the electric hyper SUV with race car DNA. It's like, whatever that means. It's a sharp-looking car. I won't deny that. It's a little sharper than a lot of what you see.
It's sharp, and it's pretty big. I saw it, you know, it was parked. I saw first the tail end of it, and I thought, huh, because it was in a parking lot, you know, next to all these little micro cars in Europe. And I'm going, huh, what's that? And I got closer, and it is big. It is very big. But it is sharp looking in more ways than one. I mean, it's edgy, as far as from a design standpoint. But it was pretty slick looking.
No, it is the one they have pictured on their website is a yellowish mustard yellow, if you will. But
yep.
It actually looks
captures your attention.
It actually looks quite spectacular. Yeah, with the blending of a very different headlight configuration than you normally see these days. Because the headlights are almost at the point where the flat on the top, it's hard to say that they would shoot forward if you look at it.
I think we're coming towards the end, but I want to just comment about a new car that Stellantis / Dodge has put out, and that's the Hornet, which is built in Italy. I think they replaced what I would call a very tiny Jeep with this new Dodge Hornet. And it's a hybrid. It comes with a plug-in hybrid, an electric and a regular fossil-fueled engine. I saw a few down at a dealership in Torrington, Connecticut, nearby, and they were in lousy colors, and that didn't impress me at all as being something I would want to go out and buy.
You scared me for a second.
What?
You scared me for a second.
Yeah, well, don't worry. I'm not getting one. They had a red one on the showroom, which was smart, because that captivated my eye like the yellow captivated Mike's eye. And they show it performing at some off-road rally event, and it's designed to be an off-road vehicle, maybe what the Mustang wants to do with their attempt at producing an off-road capable vehicle, as we started out this show talking about, which I hope they don't do. Any safety tips of new
just something
the need reviewing?
My mind, safety tip. In Europe, you have to have a very bright green, yellow, you know, vest as a safety item in your car, so that if you have a problem and you're on the side of the road,
you wear
up that vest. which I think is fluorescent, and you can be seen and not get run over as you're trying to attend to whatever issue you have with your car.
That would be good to be transferred to this country, I would think, as a standard equipment thing in the trunk.
Oh, and fire extinguishers.
I watched some people on the side of a couple of highways over the last few days trying to change a tire. The car is half over the sideline in some couple of cases, and the people are on the speeding side of the car, and you know, you just can't see these things fast with all the other distractions you have visually on the highways very quickly. And I would think a fluorescent vest would be a very smart thing to mandate as being needed to be worn outside a car if your car's broken down.
That wraps it up.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.